Appendix. The Hellenistic Schools of Practical Philosophy. Wonder is the feeling of a philosopher, and philosophy begins in wonder. Plato, Theaetetus, 155. Throughout this book, we have talked about ethics, specifically from the point of view of the Stoics. Ethics, of course, is one of the classical branches of philosophy, the other ones being aesthetics, concerned with beauty and art, epistemology, the study of how we know things, logic, dedicated to understanding reason, and metaphysics, to comprehend the nature of the world. But as we saw at the beginning of the book, ethics has a different meaning today than it did for the ancient Greco-Romans, and of course, the Stoics wasn't the only approach to its study. While modern ethics is essentially concerned with which actions are right or wrong, pre-modern philosophers conceived of ethics as the much broader inquiry into how to live a happy life, the pursuit of which they deemed to be a human being's most important endeavor. But a happy life can be pursued in different ways, depending on which concept of eudaimonia, the flourishing life, one adopts. The major Hellenistic schools of philosophy differed primarily on just this point, and it is useful to get a sense of what the alternatives to Stoicism were, and still are. After all, together with A Guide to the Good Life authors Bill Irvine, I believe that adopting and adapting a philosophy of life to guide you is more important than whichever specific philosophy you end up choosing. True, there are some pretty awful philosophies out there that are not conducive to human flourishing, but there are also several alternatives that may make more sense to you personally. I don't want to leave you with the incorrect impression that it's Stoicism or bust. I will not discuss the variety of life philosophies that arose within the Eastern tradition, Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism, and the like, because I simply don't know enough about them, and because there are already plenty of excellent resources out there that the interested reader can make use of. Here it will be instructive to take a quick look at those that came out of the Western tradition in the Hellenistic period before the rise of Christianity. What follows is a simplified genealogical tree of the major Hellenistic schools that either focused on or had a lot to say about the good life. As you can see in the accompanying bonus PDF, it all began with Socrates. Stemming from different interpretations of his teachings, a trio of schools arose: Plato's Academy, Aristippus's Cyrenaics, and Antisthenes's Cynicism. Aristotelianism originated from within the Academy, which Aristotle frequented. Cyrenaism led to Epicureanism, and Cynicism birthed Stoicism, although the actual relationships among all these schools are best thought of as many-to-many rather than in terms of linear descent, given the reciprocal influences that took place over centuries. Let's take a brief look at each. Who knows, it may turn out that after having learned this much about Stoicism, you are really a cynic, or, Zeus forbid, an Epicurean. Socraticism. We know what Socrates taught mostly, though not exclusively, from the early Platonic dialogues, for example, Laches, Charmides, and Protagoras. His was the prototype of the ethical approaches to virtue in which wisdom is the chief good, the only thing that is always good because it is necessary to make proper use of everything else. For Socrates, our moral imperative is to examine life, and reason is our best guide in doing so. The eudaimonic life, according to him, consists in acting in the right way, and evil is the result of ignorance, or amatia. In other words, nobody purposefully wants to do bad things. Platonism, the Academy. Plato, in the later dialogues, maintained crucial aspects of Socrates' view, critically, that the eudaimonic life is one of practicing virtue, while at the same time adding a number of metaphysical notions and recasting things in terms of his famous theory of forms, where the abstract and idealized form of the good is the transcendent principle of all goodness. He eventually subordinated individual flourishing to societal needs, as in the Republic, where the ideal state reflects the tripartite division of the human soul, and philosophers, naturally, are in charge of it. Just as reason is in charge of the spirited and appetitive parts of the individual soul. Aristotelianism. the peripatetic school, the Lyceum. For Aristotle, too, the point of life was to achieve eudaimonia through the practice of the virtues, of which he identified a whopping 12. In Aristotle's view, there is a proper function for everything in the world, including humans. Our proper function is to use reason, so using reason well is the way to live a eudaimonic life. However, we also need some external goods, such as a supportive family and societal environment, some degree of education, health, and wealth, and even some good looks. Crucially, then, being able to live a eudaimonic life is not entirely within the grasp of the agent. Some luck, in the form of favorable circumstances, is also needed. Cyrenaism. Aristippus of Cyrene was, tellingly enough, the first of Socrates' disciples to actually take money for his services. For him, the primary purpose of life was not long-term happiness, but rather the moment-to-moment experience of bodily pleasures. To achieve this, one needs practical virtue, but only instrumentally in order to seek pleasure. Still, we shouldn't think of the Cyrenaics as simply being into sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but rather as seeking what might be called enlightened hedonism. As Aristippus put it, "I possess, but I am not possessed." Self-control was important in order to maintain cheerfulness while making the best of every situation. Epicureanism, the garden. Epicurus, too, taught that life is about increasing one's pleasure and, especially, reducing one's pain. But Epicurean hedonism was much more sophisticated than its Cyrenaic counterpart. Despite later Christian smearing, deployed in a successful attempt to fight a threatening rival sect. For one thing, it included mental pleasures, which were considered superior to bodily ones, and happiness was not just a moment-by-moment thing, but a lifelong process. The Epicurean way included freeing oneself from prejudice, especially of a religious nature, mastering one's desires, living a modest life, and cultivating friendship. Crucially, however, Epicureans counseled withdrawal from social and political life, because it was much more likely to bring about pain than pleasure. Cynicism. According to Antisthenes of Athens, the founder of the Cynic school, virtue understood as practical wisdom is not only necessary for a eudaimonic life, but also sufficient. That is why the Cynics took the already rather frugal Socratic lifestyle to an extreme. Think of Diogenes of Sinope, Antisthenes' student who famously lived in a tub, begged for a living, and flaunted just about any social convention. Many Stoics admired the Cynics, and our friend Epictetus devoted the long chapter 22 of the third book of his discourses to an encomium of cynicism. As he put it, "If you really can't be a cynic, at least be a Stoic." Stoicism. Zeno of Sicium, the founder of Stoicism, learned his philosophy initially from Crates, who was a cynic and disciple of Diogenes of Sinope. As the reader by now knows well, Stoicism struck a middle ground between Aristotelianism and cynicism, while at the same time strongly rejecting Epicureanism. The Stoics granted to the Cynics that virtue is both necessary and sufficient for happiness, but also nodded toward the Peripatetics, in recovering some interest in external goods, which they classified into preferred and dispreferred indifference, to be pursued or avoided so long as they do not compromise one's integrity of character. All in all, there was a nice conceptual progression and ramification from the Socratic starting point. The Platonic Aristotelian branch stuck close to Socratic eudaimonism, but the Platonists went mystical, the theory of forms, the ideal republic, while the Aristotelians turned pragmatic. Some external goods are necessary to achieve eudaimonia. The Cyrenaic Epicurean branch abandoned the centrality of virtue and turned toward the pleasure-pain dichotomy instead, with the crucial difference that the Cyrenaics considered only bodily moment-to-moment pleasures, while the Epicureans most valued intellectual and lifelong pleasures. Echoes of their philosophy can be heard in John Stuart Mill and modern utilitarian ethics. Finally, the Cynic-Stoic branch stuck with the Socratic primacy of virtue, with the Cynics turning to an ascetic lifestyle, and the Stoics elaborating a way to recover, and yet put into perspective, what most people would consider desirable externals. Both of these schools were highly influential throughout the history of Christianity.
Acknowledgements. This book is the result of a personal, spiritual, philosophical, and intellectual journey that began many years ago and has taken many twists and turns, and I'm sure this won't be the end point either. Many people have directly or indirectly contributed to my journey, and I would like to acknowledge a few of them. Enrica Chiaramonte, my high school philosophy teacher, who instilled in me a passion for the subject that took a quarter century to finally blossom. Melissa Brenneman, for her support when I made the crazy decision to change careers and become a philosopher. Corinna Colatore, for being there since the beginning of my journey into Stoicism and bearing with my daily practice, no matter how inconvenient it may become at times. My colleagues at the City College of New York, for their support of my idiosyncratic approach to our discipline. The many people behind Stoic Week and Stoicon, through whom I discovered Stoicism and who have welcomed and helped me throughout. My fellow Stoic and Buddhist, Greg Lopez, who has taught me much about Epictetus, Marcus, and Seneca. Tise Takagi, my agent, who has been enthusiastic about this project since the beginning and an invaluable guide throughout. TJ Kelleher, my editor at Basic Books, whose professionalism keeps striking me every time we work together. And my very careful copy editor, Cindy Buck.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of How to Be a Stoic, Using Ancient Philosophy to Live a Modern Life. Written by Massimo Pigliucci. Read by Peter Coleman. With dedication and acknowledgements read by the author. Produced and recorded by Audio Media Production. Post-production by Audio Media Production. How to Be a Stoic is also available in print and digital formats from Basic Books, an imprint of Perseus Books, LLC, a subsidiary of Hachette Book Group, Inc. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. This audiobook includes a Mac and PC-compatible bonus PDF. Text copyright 2017 by Massimo Pigliucci. All rights reserved. Audio production copyright 2017 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.